Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis. My name is Alex Hayter-Winnett. I am this year's ministerial intern and campus minister.
My name is Ann Hillman, and I'm your worship associate today. We're so glad you're here today with us.
As Unitarian Universalists, we believe that all people are inherently worthy of dignity. You are welcome here, no matter how you identify, whom you love, no matter the color of your skin, where you spent the night, the money in your pocket, your chosen family or family of origin, no matter your questions about life, God, the universe, or whatever, you are welcome here.
If this is your first time here, we hope you will stop by our welcome table so we can get to know you. Here you will find a community of caring and sharing. In your printed bulletin, you will find more information about the programs of our church. There are many ways to get involved, and we hope you will join us in creating this community together.
This morning, you are invited to light a chalice in the back of the sanctuary and write in our milestone book. If you wish, we will add your joy or sorrow to this morning's pastoral prayer or in the caring corner in our bulletin.
To acknowledge all that is being held by the people in this room, we light one pillar candle for the sorrows of the world, for the moments that weigh heavy on our hearts. We light a second pillar candle for the joys of the world, for the moments of hope and celebration.
So I'm surprised to see you here this morning. I don't often greet you that way, but the reason we don't see a lot of children here is because families and some people without young children are at Farm Davis today. So that is where our church program for children and youth went today. And everyone was invited. That's why I'm saying I'm surprised to see you this morning. This is a social service project, and it has several important characteristics. It involves learning. It involves direct action, which is what you're seeing right there, and asking the congregation for support. This gives the children and youth a great sense of empowerment because basically they tell us what to do. And that is sometimes a very good thing. And we give them money to a cause that they care about. They're practicing social service and understanding issues of justice. And what you practice, we'll hear about this more today, is what you become. So in April, Farm Davis will receive half of the money that we collect in our offering. So that is next month. And at the farm, fresh fruits and vegetables and eggs are harvested to give those in need in our local community, including Davis Community Meals, Empower YOLO, Steak, and low-income housing families. And when I was up at URC, the University Retirement Community, I was mentioning to some of our folks who live there about this program, and they said, we really wish that when we had children, there was a religious exploration program like this, where they can actually go and plant the onions, later go and harvest the onions, learn about how this is going to be going to food cupboards, and have made it happen. So that it was their agency. The farm, on a consistent basis, also offers educational opportunities for area students and programs like ours. So the farm operates year-round, and it's done by volunteers. And our church has done several Saturday work days at the farm already. And for those who are interested, we will return on Saturday, April 6th from 10 to noon. And I have done this before. It was shortly after I was healed from a new shoulder replacement. And I could actually do it because we were planting green onions and it just takes this much of a gesture again and again. So, but it was wonderful because I got to know several families sitting in the dirt and just being with them. And so everyone can do that. So you are welcome. And so maybe on the 7th you would come in just a little grimy. Our children and youth will return to Farm Davis again Sunday, June 9th, to harvest what they're planting today. And I do believe it's green onions again. But they will be out there seeing the fruits, the vegetables of their labor. And it's a great program. So I encourage you to learn about it, to go there with the children and youth in the future. And now we will be singing the children's blessing, but here are the options. This Sunday, children and youth are invited to remain with their parents, or there is childcare in the Bridge House. So those are our options, because otherwise, religious exploration is in the dirt over at Farm Davis.
The Free Range Singers is a lighthearted group for anyone who wants to sing, led by our former church choir director, Laura Sandage. When I joined it about 6 years ago, I thought of myself as an accomplished singer. I had learned skills from singing in choirs throughout my childhood. Then I heard Laura sing, and I found a new paradigm of what the voice could do. I wanted to sing like that. And I took what clues I could. In response to one of my questions, Laura said, "Use the muscles of your rib cage rather than your throat." I explored this new body part with the enthusiasm of an infant discovering toes. Whenever I sang especially well, I noted what my body was doing. Then I joined our church choir and learned adult choir rehearsal basics. Open your music fast. Find measure numbers. Mark reminders in your music. Practice outside of rehearsal. I became adept at finding out what I didn't know and asking for it. When I didn't know how to learn music by sight singing from a printed score, Laura suggested a textbook. I carried it everywhere so that I could practice it whenever I had to wait. I took a few voice lessons with Laura until 4 years ago, I felt ready to audition for the Davis Chorale, and Allison graciously let me in. Putting myself in that challenging environment and forced me to learn. I emulated the good singers all around me. My ear began to hear how the parts fit together and how to find my entry note from another part or even an orchestra. I started taking weekly voice lessons with Allison. I learned to control the muscles of my soft palate, jaw, and tongue. I learned ways to use my air and how to resonate. I exercised to stretch my range. Difficult pieces taught me maneuvers which I could apply to future tough spots. I was always listening, always comparing, and always practicing. I practiced the things which were hardest for me. Accomplishment gave me the joy of seeing difficulties become easy and of being able to use new skills as foundations for more skills. It gave me the momentum to want to keep on learning. Now, as you shall see, to overcome my nervousness, I force myself to do solos. I will be taking a college course in music theory and sight singing this fall. All of this, of course, is good for my self-esteem and well-being. I feel invigorated and completely myself when I use my mind and body to full capacity. It keeps life interesting. Having a fervent interest keeps me growing. Contributing my voice to the community makes me feel of worth. In concert, I love the profound unity of a whole hall of people completely focused in the moment. It's a feeling of belonging. When I make the music soar, or have delicate precision, or convey emotions, I'm loving both the music and my accomplishment.
Thank you, Anne. Part of this is poem and part of this is paraphrasing by Laura Hershey. If you are not proud for who you are, for what you say, or how you look, if every time you stop to think about yourself, you do not see yourself glowing with golden light, do not give up on yourself. You can get proud. Laura Hershey tells her readers, you don't need a pure spirit, more money, or a PhD. To get proud, you don't have to be able to walk. A caseworker or a doctor can't make you feel pride in yourself. And using complicated words won't make you see yourself as worthy. Hershey writes, here's how to find a sense of pride. Speak about love to a friend without fear. Find someone who will listen to your story without judging. Try something you do well or don't do well. Ride a horse, play the guitar, ski on one leg, and be glad you tried. Add your voice to 150 others outside a jailhouse for protesting in front of buses that are not accessible with lifts. You won't stand out as a hero, but you'll add to a number of people. Or be one of the people inside the jailhouse, knowing that there are people who circle the jailhouse to support the cause and you. Show something you made to someone you respect and be happy no matter what they say. You are the only one who can create confidence in yourself, to see yourself in a golden glow that is a healthy sense of pride. And it happens by practicing and practicing and practicing. In Anne's essay, we heard the importance of music in her life, how she lives with curiosity, addresses her fears. And so pride can be a really good characteristic, no matter what you've heard before about pride. When it gives us courage to stretch to what is possible to achieve, to live more fully, pride is a really good thing to help us stand and be upright. It's a good thing. Anne's focus on her dedication to vocal music helped me choose the direction of the sermon and introduce to you someone through the story of his life who I believe might just understand Anne and who lived with pride in the very best sense. Seth McCoy was one of the country's leading oratorio tenors for 3 decades. He was raised in North Carolina and attended a technical and agricultural college. After serving in the Army, Seth worked as a postal clerk in Cleveland, Ohio for 13 years. And in the evening, Seth studied to become a barber and hoped someday to own his own barber shop. Seth McCoy had no intention of becoming a professional singer. Employees at the post office, however, heard Seth sing. Can you only imagine what that was like in that post office? And they encouraged him to study voice, and he enrolled in a place called the Cleveland Music School Settlement. In 2006, it was the largest of its kind because it really addresses the needs of the community. The settlement, as it is known, was started in 1912 to offer inexpensive music lessons to the newly arriving immigrant children and adult wage earners, it says. And I think really that is from the great migration of blacks freed from slavery moving north, but also other immigrants coming across the ocean to settle in the United States. So it was almost free of charge. It was an effort to cultivate. Most bios of Seth McCoy begin with his life as a postal worker, and then in one huge, enormous leap, the interviewers describe his auditions with Robert Shaw, becoming the soloist for the Robert Shaw Chorale. In an interview with the LA Times much later, Seth McCoy attributed his successful career as serendipity and a willingness to try the unexpected. Serendipity and the willingness to try the unexpected. And that was somewhat true. But the arc of his career was the result of talent, incredible talent, and hours of disciplined study. As Seth's career developed, cultivating his voice became his whole life. He was ultimately the soloist for the New York Philharmonic, the Philadelphia and Cleveland orchestras, and the list goes on. And when he was 50, he gave his first performance with the Metropolitan Opera. And the article about him said that often opera singers are starting to step away from their careers at that point, and he was just barely beginning. This was his journey to excellence. And the dedication shaped not only the direction of his life, but who he was, his spirit self that is really hard to put a name to. Music was how he experienced gratefulness, his place among others, how he saw himself as worthy. And he could have stayed at the post office. Maybe he could have opened that barber shop. But he said if he didn't try to see what music could offer him, then he would wonder about this missed opportunity for his whole life. In an interview with Ebony magazine, he encouraged black young men to pursue careers singing classical music if that was their dream. He was only the third black man to sing with the Met in its 96-year history. And he felt he spent too much time and energy listening to his own fears and his own self-doubts. He chose to not discuss with Ebony magazine the reasons why so few black male singers had been chosen to play opposite white leading women, only saying, "I could speculate." So he was a postal clerk who dreamed of opening his own barbershop. And he ended his career as a professor of voice at the Easton School of Music in Rochester, New York. So I didn't know any of this history about him when I met him. I visited his home for many years, twice a month, when I studied voice with his wife, Jane Gunter McCoy. He was usually in the next room, and I cringe. Really, really cringe when I remember the weeks he endured hearing the same song with the same mistakes because I hadn't practiced. I know, heavy sigh. Ted, I know that was you. There were always excuses for why I hadn't practiced. I was in ministry and it was very busy. Always great excuses. Seth McCoy had a one-in-a-million voice, and he dedicated the necessary time to achieve this excellence. He would be a perfect example for Malcolm Gladwell's theories for success in his book, Outliers. Gladwell did an analysis of the most successful people in music and sports and science, and disciplined hard work was one reason for success of anyone, not IQ, as we once imagined. Anyone, although I think 130 IQ is pretty darn good, anything above that was just like, oh, well, meh. It was hard work that made the difference. In this book, The Outliers, which I think many people have read, what I remember being mentioned most often was how the mastery of complicated tasks, not those easy ones, but the complicated tasks and roles with nuance, takes an average of 10,000 hours of practice. So we shouldn't expect excellence for 7 to 10 years if the task is a difficult one. It made me feel good, you know, to not have to expect that much of myself or of others. 7 to 10 years. But the research also showed that extremely successful people were in the right place at the right time, or they received important help from others. The individual is important, but the individual doesn't become excellent or successful just alone. That is not possible. There is always an assist from outside that person, always. When Gladwell was asked what message he wanted people to take away after reading Outliers, he answered, "What we do as a community, as a society, for each other, matters as much as what we do for ourselves. There is a web of advantages and inheritances, some deserved, some not, some earned, and some of us are just plain lucky." People who know excellence and a healthy sense of pride achieve it because of a community of people striving for excellence. And the community practices what is central to them, if you can imagine this, 10,000 times, if it's a difficult task, in all the ways that Laura Hershey described in the poem I read and paraphrased to start the sermon. Striving for excellence can be seen through our actions, but it also is who we become within, our spirit self. If you do something 10,000 times, it becomes a part of you. When Anne dedicates herself to music, there is the song that she gives, but she's also changed in the process of the thousands of ways she dedicates herself. And is that not as important as the song itself? Seth McCoy created his identity through how he dedicated his life. Unitarian Ralph Waldo Emerson also addresses this. Even in the mid-1800s, he said, "A person will worship something. They will have it at the center of their lives. Have no doubt. Whatever dominates our imagination and our thoughts will direct our lives and our character. Let us be careful what we worship, what we center in our lives. For what we worship, we are becoming." What would we have at the center of our lives and the life of our faith as a church, as a denomination? As Unitarian Universalists, we welcome a wide diversity of theology. We speak about welcoming different economic abilities and races, sexual orientations, and gender identities. We are being thoughtful about the needs of different life circumstances of age, blended families with two faiths, and special needs children. We continue to grow in our understanding. The first principle is to treat everyone with worth and dignity, especially those who have been marginalized, silenced, made invisible by the society in which we live. Whenever possible, it is our responsibility as a church and as a community to listen to those who identify as having been marginalized, to have them represent themselves, to speak for themselves. This is central to our faith and who we strive to become in the future. It is work we will always need to do. We are far from being finished with learning how to welcome diversity, and we are becoming more aware of the possibilities of diversity all the time. At the beginning of my career, and I would say I have been in the ministry 32 years, there were very few women hired as parish ministers. On clergy retreats and local conferences, I would be among a handful of female-presenting clergy, and we were invisible. I can tell you, we were invisible. It was difficult to find an opportunity to add to a conversation in clergy discussions. We were often overlooked by our male presenting colleagues, and then maybe our comments would be added a little bit later in the conversation by a male presenting colleague, and they'd say, hey, that's a really good idea. And when it was time for a job search, our names would be sent to small, out-of-the-way congregations. And if we'd say, what about that congregation? Oh, no. Let me give you these names. Over time, there was a growing awareness among many of our male-presenting colleagues. They became allies who welcomed us and made sure our comments were heard and respected, and I was so very grateful. And then clergy who were openly lesbian and gay were ordained, and they were invisible. They struggled to be hired at congregations throughout the country. Lindy Ramson was applying to ministries across this country, and it was so difficult for her to find one position, this incredibly talented minister. And congregants would ask, and we would hear this often, what if the church becomes known as the gay church? Maybe it will all be gay people at the church then. And there will be no place for me. Many of us wouldn't accept an interview with a congregation that wouldn't consider hiring a minister who identified as gay. We made a covenant. And I don't know how strong the bias against gay ministers is today. I can't speak to that because I am not lesbian or gay. But I do see my colleagues serving wonderful congregations. Through the years, one new barrier after another has been challenged, however, not perfectly resolved. I don't want us to think we've got that now. We don't have to think about that anymore. Because this last week, our quarterly publication, The World Magazine, published an article called After L, G, and B. Listening to transgender and non-binary people, it says, is about respect, relationship, and whether we can be truly an inclusive faith. Well, the article was written by a white, heterosexual, cisgender, meaning someone whose personal identity and gender corresponds with their birth sex. The voice of those who know themselves to be trans was silenced because none were invited to author the article, although they had offered. Although they serve among us, it was as if they could not speak for themselves. I don't know of their pain, but I have known something like that in my own past. Although Kimberly French, the author of the article, intended no harm, she just hoped to educate. She misrepresented the wide diversity of people who identify as trans, and false information is really difficult to counter once it's out there. Apologies for the article's publication have been given by the author, the world editor, Christopher Walton, and the president of the UUA, Susan Frederick Gray. I'm still reading the responses to the World article from trans religious professionals of our denomination. More responses were coming in late last night. This week, I am more intensely aware of my own gender identity and sexual orientation, and am sensitive to the fact that I am speaking about this issue. I am considering, what is it that I worship? What is central in my life? What is it that we worship here as a community? What is central to who we are? And I'm looking at the ability to live with curiosity. And if I am afraid, addressing fears and allowing myself to be stretched and to live more fully. If we are nervous about welcoming correctly the right language, we'll have to overcome our nervousness by doing the equivalent of solos, facing what we fear. Use Anne as an example. But even solos don't happen without support. When Anne was singing, Andre was playing, you were listening. I saw your faces, encouraging. Remembering that people cannot achieve anything without the community. If any of us hope to reach for excellence in accepting diversity and how we are becoming more aware of it, we will need to do this together, all of us. So I invite you to join me in ensuring as much as possible that this community is a place of pride, and that word can be used in so many ways, as we know. It can start by listening to the stories of those who are trans, if they are brave enough to speak in a place where they're not sure. Is this a place where I can share my authentic self? No matter what our gender identity or sexual orientation, may we be found worthy of trust. And to that I say, amen. Amen. I invite you into a time of prayer and meditation. Two, breathe, to be still, to truly come to this place and be here with these people. Spirit of life, as we weather winds of change, may we have the wisdom to cherish moments of stillness. As we recollect times of challenge and of pain, may we also remember the graceful blessings of our lives. As we look into the future unknown, may we have the boldness to trust that there is unimagined good yet to come. Each of us is a part of the intricate web of relationships. When one of us celebrates a joy or grieves a loss, the web of life moves to a new shape. We are a part of the turn of the earth, the shift of the stars, the pull of the sea, and all change. Amen. And you're invited to take hands and link across the aisles and make sure that everyone is included. These words by Matt Mayer, a musician and a lay leader in our congregations. May we go forward in purposeful rhythm,
that we may give voice to the melody of our imaginations, the music of our souls,
and all the possibilities of a just world as we might together create it. Let this congregation say amen.
Amen.